This is CBS Eye on the World, Hotel Mars, episode end, continuing with David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. And it's a great privilege to speak to MIT Professor Richard Binzel, who is part of the mission to intercept Apophis, the near-Earth object that will pass within geosynchronous orbit. That means very close in 2029. Those in Europe, I believe, will be able to see it flash across the sky. It'll be like a meteor, a pretty large meteor, so it'll be distinctive, maybe a moving star across the sky. At the same time, there are other near-Earth objects out there, and we're discussing one called that hit at Chelyabinsk in 2013, and we learned from that it comes out of nowhere. Professor, I interrupted you as you were saying we don't yet discern something that small. But I understand we also don't discern things that come out of the sun. Do I have that correct? A different orbit than what struck the Yucatan.
That's right, John. You know, our telescopes on the Earth have to worry about day-night cycles, weather, and things like that. And, you know, we're really, the surveys that we do have for asteroids are really concerned about finding the largest ones first. We don't throw out the small guys that we find, but, you know, it's basically a large funnel where the largest asteroids that have the most consequences are the ones we are working on finding first. Things as small as Chelyabinsk, there's probably millions of those out there, and so it's a big task to find them. Fortunately, things like Chelyabinsk, you know, maybe happen every century or so, and most of those are over water. And so they're incredibly, incredibly rare.
The other mystery in Russia we need to attend to. I grew up not understanding what happened. There was always this idea that space aliens had crashed a spaceship somewhere in the Siberian wilderness and all the trees had been knocked down. What do we think happened in 1908, Professor?
John, what you're referring to is called the Tunguska impact, again, in Siberia. You know, Russia covers 9 time zones, so it's a big target on Earth. We think in 1908, an object, over a football field-sized object, entered the atmosphere. Again, the Earth's atmosphere was able to break it apart. The object itself didn't reach the surface to make a crater, but the shockwave, the air, got pushed out in front of this little asteroid, hit the ground and flattened the trees for many hundreds of square miles. And those kind of events we think happen once every few centuries. So it's incredibly rare. And again, these probably mostly land over water. But Tunguska is in the size of, I may have said a little larger, but something in the size of 50 to 100 meters. Is getting into the size range that we're beginning or soon to have capabilities of getting a nearly complete inventory of these sorts of objects. And so that, I think that's a major goal for space scientists in terms of practical knowledge we can use, we can obtain to help citizens of planet Earth, is to get a very good inventory of these objects. And we just simply need to know what's out there. And if something has our name on it, then we want to have time to try to address it.
David, you have a question for the professor.
Yes, in terms of planetary defense for these objects, two parts to it. Is there ever any thought of, well, it's going to hit on the ocean, let's not try to interact with it? And number two, is there any work being done to mitigate the shockwave?
That's a really good question, David. There is a group called the International Asteroid Warning Network, IWAN, and a group called the Space Mission Planning Advisory Group called Same Page. These are organizations chartered by the United Nations, and these organizations do all sorts of tabletop exercises and what-if scenarios involving, including with civil defense, so that if an object were discovering it was going to hit the ocean, you can make that decision and say, yes, never mind, it's going to hit in the ocean. The consequences for any tidal wave are minimal. And so let it come and we'll study it as it comes in. So the exact response you might mount depends on many, many parameters, including the impact location, what the asteroid is made out of, the velocity, the impact angle, et cetera. So there's no one single answer. Each one is quite unique, but a whole range of options are always on the table.
Recently, Professor, we went through an exciting several days in which an asteroid was discovered, and the first calculations gave it a rating on the Turin scale, which is a way of talking about how dangerous is it, that we'd never seen before. And then there was a recalculation. Can you recover what happens when they first spot something and the first calculation says danger? And what do they do then to reduce the danger or keep working at it? How does it go? Is it a worldwide network that does this? Is it people in their homes with their Macs open? What does it look like?
So we have asteroid survey telescopes all over the world and new ones coming online. And I like to give a baseball analogy. You're sitting in the bleachers and you're in Yankee Stadium and Aaron Judge hits the ball. And you see it come off the bat as a fly ball. And you're worried it's going to hit you on the head. Well, you don't know if it's going to hit you on the head until you keep watching that fly ball and keep watching it, see where it's going to land. And it hits the left field foul pole and you're safe in the bleachers, okay? So the first discovering an asteroid is just like that, where the first piece of the orbit that we see is just right off the bat. And we don't know where these asteroids are going to be until we keep watching them and watching them and watching them. And sometimes that first piece, the first bit or right off the bat says, wait a minute, looks like it could head to the Earth in some future date. And so that's what the Torino scale there is for. It reached a 3 on the Torino scale, which meant it had more than a 1% chance of hitting the Earth. Or in other words, we couldn't rule it out with more than 99% certainty. And so in the Torino scale, one of the things it tells us is for a value of 3, that is that most likely we will eventually get enough of an orbit track to say that it's going to miss the Earth completely. And in this case, it took a week or two to get enough data from astronomers all over the world, basically kind of dedicating some of their own telescope time to furthering the track, measuring that track to make sure that it would miss the Earth. So it was a worldwide effort. The International Asteroid Warning Network gets into gear to just basically ask world astronomers to pay attention to it. And they did. And all in all, it was quite a success story that something was found. It was interesting. And we got enough data to make sure that it really wasn't a hazard after all.
David?
Totally what we expected.
Can any of the space telescopes help on this subject, or is everything based on a terrestrial telescope?
The rule of thumb is anything you can do with a telescope on Earth, you do with a telescope on Earth. It's easier to operate. But the James Webb Space Telescope is going to look at this asteroid 2024 YR4. In fact, I think it has made one set of observations and is going to repeat them. So that was scheduled just because this little asteroid was becoming increasingly difficult to look at from the ground. And so James Webb and the space telescopes get scheduled many weeks and months in advance. So NASA was very responsive to schedule it for just to make sure this asteroid was staying on track and on a safe trajectory. And so we're following through with that. And so maybe a few more weeks downstream before we know how those data turn out. But we're already confident that this 2024 YR4 asteroid poses no threat to the Earth. And we'll refine exactly where it's going to be, probably something around the distance to the moon and maybe even a close shave for the moon. But there are times when the space assets are quite valuable.
Now we come to the shiny new tool, the Vera Rubin under construction. What is it meant to do, Professor?
So the Vera Rubin telescope, which will operate in Chile and come online later this year, is going to do all sky survey. It's a telescope designed to look at the whole sky, everything, everywhere, all the time. almost. Things like Hubble and James Webb are specialized to look at very tiny patches of the universe and study them in great detail. The Vera Rubin telescope wants to look at all the sky and just watch everything that changes in the sky from night to night to night. And so it's going to tell us a lot about the universe, which is its primary job. But in the process, it will discover a lot of these moving asteroids and will catalog them. And so we'll begin to get an even more complete inventory of what asteroids are out there. And then we will have a space-based asset to follow the Vera Rubin telescope. It's called the Near-Earth Object Surveyor, or NEO Surveyor, that will launch as soon as 2027. And in space, it will be able to operate 24/7, 365. And it will also make its measurements in the infrared light, which is light beyond what the eye can see. That will tell us the temperature of these objects. And from the temperature, we can basically deduce whether they're bright or dark and figure out how large they are. And so it will discover to this NEO Surveyor will give us even greater completeness and a lot more physical information on everything we discover. So they are great complements to one another.
David, you have a question.
When all of these telescopes come on, is there a percentage of reliability of data on protecting the Earth that you can say, or a probability number that we now are 93% covered? How do you assess that, or is it even thought in those terms?
Yes. One of the goals is to get at least 90% completeness for objects larger than 140 meters. And between Vera Rubin and the Near Earth Object Surveyor, we'll do that in about 10 or 20 years. We'll get to that 90% completeness. 140 meters is important because at that size, even an ocean impact might matter in terms of a hazard to coastal cities. And so so it's a size threshold that we think that if we can get an inventory completeness for these really large objects at 140 meters and larger, then we're doing really the first level of ensuring the long-term safety for citizens of Earth for centuries into the future.
We're speaking to Richard Binzel, Professor of Planetary Science, Joint Professor of Aerospace Engineering and McVicker Faculty Fellow at the MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Importantly, he's a science collaborator for the OSIRIS-APEX rendezvous meeting in 2029 of a satellite probe, OSIRIS, that will meet up with Apophis. When we come back, we are going to give the professor an unlimited budget and ask where we go with him. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.